Are you getting ready to buy a home and need a home inspector? Well, the Handy Guys talk to the president of the largest home inspectors organization up next on the Handy Guys podcast.
Welcome to the Handy Guys podcast, where we work together to complete that honey-do list, featuring answers to your questions and head-to-head tool challenges. Let's get started with the show with the Handy Guys, Brian and Paul.
All right, welcome to episode number 32, and I can barely hear myself because I'm using crappy headphones, Brian. But we can still continue with the Handy Guys podcast. And today we have an interesting podcast for our listeners. We know some of our listeners, we've already received emails, are getting ready to purchase a home, even in this down market, and they want to inspect the home before final sale. And there's been some questions about how do you find a good home inspector? Well, today we talked to the president of the American Home Inspector. What is it, Brian?
The American Society of Home Inspectors.
Thank you, Paul. ASHI. I can't even get it straight for starting our podcast. We go right to the top dog. We want to find out what it means to be part of ASHI and how you get a good home inspector for your new home and what home inspectors do. But before we do that, let's give out our contact information.
Okay, you can always call us at area code 615-676-0877, or you can use the contact form on our website, handyguyspodcast.com, or email us at handyguyspodcast.com.
And we're already receiving some great ideas for our fall podcast from our episode last week, and keep sending them in, and we have some free Handy Guys podcast merchandise. But without further ado, let's get to that interview we have here with us today. Brian Grant, who is president of the American Society of Home Inspectors. And the Handy Guys have been talking about buying homes, selling homes. We've discussed home inspections as far as, you know, you're building, rebuilding your basement or finishing your basement. You have to get code enforcement. But we wanted to talk about, in terms of buying a home, that process of inspecting it before you actually get to closing. And so we thought we would bring on Brian Grant, who is president of the American Society of Home Inspectors, and ask some questions about, you know, the importance of having a home inspection when you purchase a home and how to find a good home inspector. And so we have Brian with us. Thank you for calling in, Brian.
Welcome, Brian.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate it. And tonight we wanted to just discuss this whole idea of home inspection. Brian and I have both bought a couple homes and we've used home inspectors. But you are the president of the American Society of Home Inspectors, or ASHI. And I wanted to first find out what ASHI is all about and what it does as far as the home inspector community.
ASHI is the largest and most professional home inspection society in America. We've been a society for over 30 years, and we've got fairly stringent code of ethics and standards of practice that have been developed over the years that kind of show what on a house should be inspected and some of the things that necessarily wouldn't be inspected. And in order to belong to ASHI, you have to have done 250 inspections, fee paid for other folks. So there is and also passed the National Home Inspector Exam, which is an exam that tests the skills and knowledge about the home inspection profession.
Out of curiosity, how do you do 250 home inspections without first being a member of ASHI? Is that you assist someone else, or you do it under some other umbrella organization, or how does that work?
No, a lot of times, you know, we originally were not in a licensed environment where there was any government regulation on inspections,
right. And
people were just allowed to hang a shingle up and do inspections. And there still is some of that out there, although 31 of the 50 states now have some sort of government regulation about licensing. But even some of the regulations don't have testing components. Some of them don't have experience components, and some of them, have varying degrees of standards. So, but ASHI feels that it's just important that you would have the three-legged stool of experience, testing, and education all combined in order to be a member of our professional society.
Gotcha. And what kind of background would a typical home inspector have?
A lot of our inspectors, of course, come out of the construction trades. But there are more and more folks getting into our profession that have been ex-military or, architects or engineers. Really it runs the full range. We've had people that have come out of the car industry and sales industry.
How about handy guys?
Handy guys, absolutely handy guys. I'd say an awful lot of our folks are handy guys. It's rarely been traditionally a first career for people. A lot of our folks are second, third careers where they may have had done something else in their lives, and they're looking for something different to do, and they're able to bring their experience and into this profession, because it's hard, you know, being handy guys, you don't just come by that, and there's not really a school for
right.
becoming a handy guy. You have to learn some of that out there in the world.
And how typically do your inspectors stay current, you know, with new technologies like heat recovery ventilators or, I don't know, solar technologies, you know, feeding electricity back into the grid, some of the new green technologies or whatever people are interested in these days and building into their existing homes or new homes? How do they stay current on things like that?
That's a great question. And one of the reasons that people belong to a professional society like ours, like ASHI, is that we do provide and require continuing education in order to keep current as a member. And we have chapters in various parts. I think we have 85 or more chapters in the various states where people can go to get education to stay current on those. We also hold a conference at the end of the year, typically in January. And at that conference, we have a three-day event where people can come. And this year, for instance, our Inspection World Conference, we have a whole green building track. We also have an ICC track. ICC is the International Conference of Code Officials, Code Inspectors, and which is the code enforcement arm. And we're having a whole track so inspectors can keep up with that kind of current requirements also. So that's just one of the advantages of belonging to a professional society like ASHI is that you can get your education and you can be around a network with people who are also in that profession. That's a key component of it is because a lot of times, just like a handyman, you don't always learn by doing things, but you can learn by talking to the good old boys that have been doing it for a long time.
Sure. Now, you mentioned code inspection, and sometimes some of the people that come to our site to get information from us, maybe they sometimes are confused between a code inspection if they're doing a building project and a home inspection. When maybe you could help clarify that, like when is a home inspection typically done and when's a code inspection? What's the difference?
Most of the time the code inspections are done for original building projects when you can see either raw ground or you're seeing a property that's at the stud level. It's really a bare project, and city officials would inspect for codes as it was being built. We in the various stages, that's why we would have phase inspections, which, by the way, ASHI's also getting involved in just providing education on how to conduct phase inspections. But they would inspect the studs as part of that. They would inspect the inside, the wiring, rough plumbing, footing detail, and things like that. Whereas a home inspector, when we go out to a property, we're looking at a house that might be, well, we can look at them when they're new, but oftentimes it's resale houses. So we're looking at how the house is performing and how it's functioning. You can have a house that is 25 years old that may not meet a lot of the newer codes as far as ground faults and arc faults, perhaps even safety glass and things like that.
Is that something that would be pointed out in a home inspection? Like, let's say you are in a 100-year-old house. We have those around here. And, you know, it's got knob and tube wiring. It's got, of course, no ground faults, arc faults. You know,
not making fun of my house, Mark.
Right. And,
you know, absolutely. A home inspector, you know what I mean? A home inspector, part of our code of ethics and our standard of practice, require us to talk about things that may have safety implications for our buyers, for our clients. And having wiring that is the old knob and tube wiring or lack of safety glass, hand railings that don't meet current standards, things like that, typically would be listed on a report, perhaps as an improvement, because we're not required, or you, a home buyer or a home seller typically is not required to bring a house up to code, if you will.
Right.
But we think it's still important that a buyer understand the implications of buying an older home like that. Safety.
Right.
And you know, a good home inspector should be able to tailor the inspection to meet the needs of the clients in some ways. If you're inspecting a house and your client has two little kids, they may have some issues with safety railings and safety glass and pool barriers and things, where the house that grandpa and grandma are going to come live with you, we might be looking at different kinds of trip hazards and lighting issues and things like that. So,
Brian, I want to ask some more questions about inspecting a potential home you're going to buy, but I have another question. Are there any other times where you might want to employ a home inspector other than when you're buying a new house or an old house?
Absolutely. And you know, a lot of inspections now are being done for listing purposes. In this market that's a little bit down, buyers have a lot more choices out there, and it's important for sellers to make sure that they have the best property in the best condition, because that's of who they're competing with.
Sure.
So we're doing more and more listing inspections where we would go out to a home and say, you know, if you were able to do this maintenance and maybe upgrade this or upgrade that, and working with or without realtor, sometimes you can find that the house becomes more presentable, and issues won't come up on an inspection then that can cause the deal to go south at the end of the process.
Sure. Yeah, and in a similar vein, I've known I've recommended and at least once or twice someone was just trying to prioritize all the things that needed fixed or done around the house. They weren't sure how the condition of the roof, whether it was something they needed to budget for the upcoming years on replacement, and they brought in a home inspector to help them sort of prioritize some of the issues and help them determine.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I just did an inspection earlier this week for a homeowners association that had four townhouse units, and that's exactly what they were doing. They wanted me to give them a idea about the roof and the exterior and the trim and their walkways and retaining walls and grounds and really help them to do a maintenance type inspection, so they could do exactly that. They could prioritize their funds and figure out, you know, how to strategize getting the building up to a good maintenance standard in stages.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, especially, you know, it gives you sort of some objective advice and with someone with some knowledge of what you're looking at.
Now, how about inspecting new houses? You mentioned phased inspections. I guess you're applying that to new construction?
Yes. On the phase inspections, oftentimes there are several types of phase inspections. One can be done for a bank just to make sure that you aren't paying the contractor more money than they have actually earned. That's a common problem with some of the people that get in trouble. They pay the contractor 80% of the money, and he's only 60% finished. So they get kind of upside down on their payments. So sometimes we can do inspections that will help them make sure that the contractor is being paid the amount for the work he's already done. But for other types of inspections, we're looking for shortcuts that builders may be taking, or at times we will actually be provided with a copy of the blueprints and be able to look at those blueprints and see if the contractor is actually building things according to the plans and specifications, and that the buyer's getting what he's supposed to be getting. So there's lots of ways to incorporate, and if somebody was going to hire a home inspector, it's just kind of important for the two to talk and really find out how to hone in on the scope of work that each individual buyer is looking for. And so there's lots of ways that inspections can be done that way.
Now, you mentioned in terms of buying a home, certainly older homes, it's kind of a no-brainer that you ought to have a home inspector. What about a house that's, you know, you just had built or perhaps is only 1 or 2 years old?
You know, I'd have to say that an awful lot of stuff that we find wrong on a home inspection has been there ever since the house was built. We'll go look at houses and find that the contractor just missed areas of the attic with insulation, or we'll find open junction boxes that have been there up in the attic since day one, or we'll find debris in the crawl space or improper drainage, or I've got lots of stories about going into a crawl space and finding all the plumbing traps and pieces and materials and saw and glue and everything sitting there to connect the bathtub to the sewer system.
Right.
It was never connected.
Nice.
They just went, and this was actually a builder in town who had things published in magazines. So it's just those kinds of things, but nobody goes back down there. The city inspectors and things don't go back down there after those rough-in inspections are done. So I think it's a very valuable experience to have somebody. I like inspecting a two-year-old home even better than new, because if there was going to be some shifting or settling or shrinkage and things like that, you're much more likely to catch those. Another type of inspection that's becoming more popular is the warranty inspections. In Arizona, where I live, the builders are required to provide a two-year warranty on the home. And people call after a year and a half, and they have an inspector come out and look at things. And because at that point in time, if there are things that have shown up over a period of time, they can call the builder to come back and have things remediated.
Right. And the other thing I liked, I've actually had inspections on a 100-year-old home and on a 2-year-old home, a 2-year-old home that really, you know, hadn't been touched at all by the original owner. But the other interesting thing, like you said, they can point out various issues that have happened in the 2 years, but also they educate you on, you know, the type of furnace you have, what its efficiency is, you know, how to adjust the duct work if there are settings for that, and, you know, various things like that. It's a real educational experience if you have a good home inspector.
Well, and this is where it's I think it's important to get a home inspector that has had some experience and has some proven track record that they have been around the block a little bit. You know, American Society of Home Inspectors, you have to have done those 250 inspections we were talking about. So they won't be looking at things for the very first time. Where there are some organizations out there that you can just, you know, pay your fees and become a part of, and you don't have some of the same requirements for experience.
Now, what do you recommend, like for our listeners that may need to get a home inspection? What do you recommend their involvement be? The reason I ask is I had a home inspector I worked with once. He said, you know, I've had people follow me around with a video camera as I did my inspection because they wanted to make sure that anything I said, they didn't miss anything. That may be an extreme, but do you recommend homeowners get involved in the inspection process?
When you say homeowner, are you talking about the home buyer or the home
seller? The home buyer, yeah. Typically, you know, like if around here, and I suspect it's like this most places, is the home buyer will contract for that inspection pre-sale. And
That's correct. Every home inspector has their own style. A lot of inspectors would want, they ask their clients to come towards the end of the inspection, so they can kind of go over the results of the inspection with them and show them anything that they would that they think would be pertinent to their purchase of the home. I like to have the home buyers there for the beginning of the inspection. I like for them to come and inspect it with me. I get to talk about more maintenance ideas and issues that may or may not show up in the report. And the discovery process is typically fun for the buyers. And on the other hand, I don't have to inspect it again at the end when they show up. Sometimes I feel like I have to inspect the whole house over again, especially if it's an older home and it has a lot of things I end up kind of inspecting the house twice. So, but each home inspector is going to have its own style, and if you were going to call one, I think it's important that you actually ask them how they like to inspect. Do they like to have you come around? And because it really is a personable type of relationship, and it's important that that you like the home inspector and like the way he does his process.
Yeah, that's a good point, Brian. I've really enjoyed the times I've gone through home inspections. And what was interesting is on my new home, I almost considered not having an inspection. I finally decided to do it, and I was thrilled that I did. I mean, I have several pages of notes. I couldn't write fast enough because, you know, like I said earlier, I mean, a lot of it was not just pointing out possible issues, but it was educating me on the various types of materials that were used. And some of those things I would have discovered eventually, but I'd rather know up front.
And that's a good point, too, because some inspectors are quiet and some talk a lot. And it's kind of important that you do get an inspector that has, you know, will meet your expectations on that.
Sure.
Yeah. Now, what's the future for home inspections going to look like? I guess a lot of your inspectors have gone from, filling out a paper form to including digital pictures and electronic copies of reports and things like that. Is that trend continuing? Is everybody doing that now? And what's down the pike for?
It's interesting that you asked that. I had just written an article for our monthly magazine, The ASHI Reporter, and it's all about. I started the title saying, "I'm a good old boy," and that's exactly how we did inspect things. We'd always go to our educational classes and say, "How do I inspect this with a flashlight and a screwdriver?" And the business, the profession really has changed quite a bit over the years with computers and the digital photographs. And now we have moisture meters. We have gas detectors. I saw a new gadget the other day, which was a meth sniffer. You could actually go in and point it around, and it was a meth detector.
I'm glad we don't got one and have one here in Brian's basement.
So, but you know, the with some of these gadgets also comes extra liability for the home inspector. Thermal imaging is a big one right now. That a lot of people have the thermal imaging cameras, and you can see inside a wall, and see different heat spots and things. So the profession has changed, and it is morphing into something a little in the past. It was always, and it's still listed as, a home inspection would be a visual inspection of current conditions at the time of the inspection. And the visual inspection kind of takes on a new look when you bring all the gadgets on site. And so it is changing. Some people will buy more and more tools to have a competitive edge, if you will. But with those bells and whistles comes some additional liability for the inspector.
Yeah, what kind of liabilities in general does a home inspector expose himself to? Do home inspectors get sued if they don't find something, for example?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of the liability on a home inspection comes with setting the expectations up of your buyers and your sellers. If I would assume that when you fellers had your home inspections, they told you what they were going to do and what they were not going to do, that you signed some contracts that said, you know, I can't see inside the wall, I can't move all their furniture,
right?
I can't predict the future, I'm doing the best I can. And part of that communication and setting up the expectation for the process is key to having a good experience, because as home inspectors, I've gone into homes before and I'll tell the people up front, I know I'm missing something today because the garage is completely full of, there's so much furniture in there. People are moving. We've inspected things when the moving company's there, moving things in and out. So you're not necessarily going to be able to find everything. But if your customer knows that and you've talked about that expectation, I've told folks I'll come back and look at things when this is cleared out if you need be. But a lot of it is just setting your expectations up front. How the inspection process is, have you guys had inspections as sellers also, as well as buyers?
Yes.
Yes.
So a lot of times your expectations get driven. If somebody, after an inspection, asked you to fix this, that, and the other thing that the inspector found, when you go to do an inspection, sometimes that's your thinking, is that you're going to ask to have all this stuff fixed.
Right.
And you know, it may not have very much to do with the actual price of the property, the value, whether you're getting a good deal or not, and those kind of things.
Sure, and that's when negotiation takes place, and it depends if it's a buyer's or seller's market and that kind of thing, too, and what gets done.
Well, exactly. Part of that, you know, I've had some interesting things where the realtors have told my buyers that, you know, this home inspector, he's just going to tell you everything there is to know about the property. And it's like, hold up, time out, I can't do that. You know, so part of it is making sure that your expectations are actually going to be able to meet their expectations.
Sure. What is just following up on that, I found like as a first-time homeowner, I was sort of overwhelmed by all the information that I wasn't even sure where to begin and what items to ask, you know, the homeowner to complete. But as I had some more experience, understood the items in a home a little better and also my own abilities, then I was able to parse out kind of that information and, you know, determining which items are not even worth asking, you know, what might seem contentious and what items are worth asking the homeowner to fix before you move in.
Absolutely. And everybody has their own comfort zone on different things. Some people will see some mold in the wall, and for them, that they would never buy a house that ever had mold in the wall because they knew somebody who had a problem.
Right.
Somebody would never buy a house that had suspected asbestos or formaldehyde or there's just lots of things where other people would not be bothered by that just based on their own experience and their what they bring to to the inspection process themselves.
Sure. Funny story, when I was selling my last house, I was there present when the home inspector took place or the home inspection from my buyers took place, along with my listing agent, along with the people that were buying the house and their family. It was a whole big party, a whole bunch of people there. And and as the home inspector was wrapping up, I said to my realtor, I said, okay, here are the three things that he's going to point out are an issue. And I listed those off the top of my head to my realtor. And she said to me, why didn't you fix those ahead of time? And I said, you know, I said, well, it's not going to add up to more than 500, which was the contingency in the pending agreement, and quite frankly, you know, they're not big issues, and sure enough, that home inspector came back and said, okay, here are the three things that you know should be taken care of, and I said, well, I'm not gonna do it, and because I had done plenty to get that house ready for sale, and the sale went through, but.
Well, and that's part of the process too. It's kind of interesting that you know, for $500, I've seen people arc their back up and refuse to sell a house or refuse to buy a house based on $500. So it does become an emotional issue rather than an issue of $500.
Right.
Which is kind of an interesting process. And in this day and age, in this market, it's much more difficult. There are so many houses on the market, and sellers are having to work a little harder at negotiating selling those houses. If you were selling that house this day, you might have had to fix those things.
That's right. I probably would have fixed them ahead of time.
Well, I think that's about all the questions we have now. Maybe one last question is, I'm sure you can't go through the whole list, but what are some big items right now in inspecting? What are some of the big key areas that you discover that, you know, when you're looking at, say, an older home that pop out at you, you know, kind of the top three or four items?
Sure. One of the biggie, of course, is the roof. The five main ticket items are the plumbing, electric, heating, the structure, and the roof. And if you have a house that's, say, 20 to 25 to 30 years old, the roofing is either going to be at the end of its useful life expectancy, or it's going to be fairly new. And there really isn't much choice in between there. But sometimes people will roof just the front and not the back of the house, those kind of things. So the roof is something you have to be particularly careful about. The same with the heating and cooling systems, because they would also be beyond their expected life. So they may be either new or need to be new. And those are the kind of things that a home buyer really needs to be able to understand the life cycle of the house. Different upgrades, you know, people are, they can see for themselves if the carpet's worn and the carpet's old and they need to redo the window treatments and things like that, and the bathrooms, what's satisfactory and what isn't. But the roof and the structure and the outside, the electrical systems needing upgrading. We talked early about the idea of the GFI receptacles, and now we have arc faults that are a different kind of protection required in bedrooms and things. The little electric eyes in the garage door. There's so many things like that would be upgradable at this point, and some people would recognize those and would want to do that, and other people would not need to.
And I imagine with energy prices going up that the HVAC system and the insulation around the house is becoming ever more important.
Well, it really is. The houses that were built, you know, in 50s, 60s, and 70s, there's still a lot of single pane windows out there and very small amounts of insulation and old block walls on the slabs and things like that. And they're still functional and they're probably still doing a fine job. And then there's always the affordability part of it. So, but everybody, there's a house out there for everybody. Some people buy a house that's in very bad condition just because they like working on a house. It's a good handyman project, if you will.
Sure.
And that's what makes those kind of houses attractive to people, is the fact that they can make it like they want it. If you have a house and somebody's already done all the handyman work on it, you can't go in and put your own personal touches on it without tearing out a bunch of good stuff. So, drainage around it, you know, landscaping is the same kind of landscaping that people did with I guess it's probably more of a Southwest thing, but, you know, we don't do the lawns and the grass out here in the Southwest.
Right.
We do rocks.
Right. That's great, because I'm sick of mowing.
I've got relatives that live in Ohio, and we go back there and see all that grass, and I just can't believe it. How much time people must spend mowing grass.
Right.
But out here, we just have rocks. So,
cool.
Plumbing systems, there's that polybutylene-type plumbing piping.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got galvanized water piping that was used fairly extensively from the 60s and older.
Uh-huh.
And some of those old piping systems develop arteriosclerosis and become problematic. And
well, what about what about things that were, you know, new technologies 20 years ago? You mentioned polybutyl, but you've got other things like synthetic stucco or that fiberboard siding, different things there have been class action lawsuits about and so forth. Do you get involved in those type of issues?
Well, yes. It's always hard to predict. The synthetic stuccos may work fine in some parts of the country and really poorly in others, depending on the climate itself. We don't have much moisture out here in the Southwest, whereas down in the Southeast, things are just incredibly humid. So different types of problems develop in different parts of the country also. There are houses down in Phoenix, for instance, most of those are built on concrete slabs, whereas a house that's built up in Minnesota, a major percentage of those all have basements. So
right.
Just the housing stock becomes a completely different issue also. But, you know, the asbestos was one of the greatest products ever made, and it's just so durable and it lasts forever. Right. And doggone it, if they hadn't found out that it caused some problems, they'd still be cranking out a lot of that asbestos.
Right.
The polybutylene piping has... The piping itself was not really much of a problem. It was the connectors and
right.
how it was put together that was the problem.
Yeah.
So the building industry, you know, there's homes out here that people build out of straw. They're building them out of tires. Some of the houses are still out in the Southwest here are old adobe block houses that are still standing. So technologies are constantly changing and constantly moving and... You know, someday if they ever figure out that fiberglass causes us problems health-wise, we're all in trouble.
Yeah,
trouble.
Really.
We are all in big trouble.
We hope not.
That's right.
Well, Brian, we appreciate your time. It's been very interesting, and certainly we've all benefited from a good home inspector. What's just last question? What is the other than, you know, we're looking for a home inspector? You've mentioned a couple things. One is it sounds like it's a good idea if they're a member of ASHI that at least shows that they've got some good experience. What are other things we can do to follow up to make sure that it's going to be an inspector we like?
Talk to the inspector. Referrals are good. If you only get a referral from your realtor, you don't know for sure that that realtor is going to have conflicts of interest themselves. But talking to people who've had good experiences and references is always a good bet. But just finding a home inspector that you talk to and you like his style and you're comfortable with and is amicable is probably the most important thing, is that you like the guy. Because you would develop, you would trust them, they're going to communicate the way that you best understand. And it really is the most important thing, is the communication process, that you and the home inspector are communicating about the condition of that property. The inspector shouldn't be trying to scare you, but he should be telling you the truth.
Well, we appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, Brian.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed our chat, and best of luck.
That's all we have this week for the Handy Guys Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.
Okay.